Welcome, everyone, to the Speaking Expert Teleseminar Series. You are here on week number 3, where we are going to be talking about marketing, Advanced Marketing and Sales Accelerator for Thought-Leading Professionals. And that mouthful of a topic will be covered by our wonderful expert, David Newman, who is on the call with us. Hello, David.
Avish, a pleasure and a privilege. Glad to be here.
Awesome. Well, David, you are the marketing guy, or at least in my mind, because whenever I have a question or need some feedback on any marketing ideas, you are one of, if not the first person I reach out to. So I'm really excited about you sharing your knowledge and wisdom with all of us here today.
And so really, the purpose of the call, Avish, is really to just give you personal advice on running your business. Is that correct?
That is correct, and I'm sure everyone will benefit from that. No, of course not. We're going to pick that delicious brain of yours and really help everyone on the call learn all about marketing and building not just their speaking business, but their thought leadership platform, which is a great phrase, and I'm going to ask you about that in a moment. But first, I would like to start these just for people who may have to drop off the call or who want to learn more about you while the call is going. How can they, where should they go to find out more about you and what you do?
Well, the Empire is online at www.doitmarketing.com. That's D-O-I-T, doitmarketing.com. And there are all sorts of goodies and free resources and apps and 96-page strategic marketing ebook and blog and wonderfulness. There's all kinds of resources up there for free that I invite people to explore and enjoy.
Okay, so check out doitmarketing.com, check out all of David's stuff, all of his free resources, and learn more about him there. Okay, for people listening, this is week number 3. The first 2 weeks we talked about, in week number 1, we talked about positioning. How do you find your niche? How do you pick a niche? And we talked a little bit about, once you've got your niche, how do you reach out to people? Last week's call with Bob Bly, we really focused on establishing yourself as the expert on your topic. And we talked a lot about content generation, about writing, books, articles, blog posts, press releases, videos, things like that. Today, we're going to take it up a notch, or at least take it to the next step, which is marketing. David's big into this thought leadership thing, which will be a little bit recovering what we did last week with Bob Bly, but then we're going to really talk about how you take that and get it out there in a way which gets us the Holy Grail, which is the phone ringing for you with people wanting to hire you as a speaker. David, does that sound fair and what you had planned on talking about?
I had planned on talking about multi-level marketing and selling you some candles, but I think this is even better.
Good. Well, I will try to keep you off the multi-level marketing topic and keep you focused on how speakers can get that phone ringing and get them paid for their knowledge and expertise.
Sounds great.
Well, let's start. I'm going to get to your background in a moment. Let's start right off the bat, though, with my favorite question, and one I'm sure you enjoy answering, which is, David, what is the biggest marketing mistake you see speakers making?
Well, Avish, I think a lot of speakers, both emerging speakers, experienced speakers, mid-career speakers, they have it all figured out. No, of course, I'm kidding. So, I see a whole bunch of mistakes, and the reason I see them so clearly is because I've made them all myself earlier in my career. I'm talking about things like no focus, no niche, no articulation of their fabulousness, no distinction from their competition, no clarity, no target market, no financial metrics that they're running their business. I mean, I encourage people, no matter where they are in their career, to stop thinking like a speaker and to start thinking like the CEO, the chief executive officer of their speaking business, even if they are the only employee, the only, you know, cook, chief bottle washer, they're everything, they're the chief of everything. Really, they're also the chief executive officer, and to make business decisions about their speaking, their topic, their niche, their target market, how they're going to monetize their expertise. So many times, and here's the overarching mistake that I'll answer your question with. We are told time and time again, we go to these entrepreneurial programs, these small business boot camps, and there's all these goobers out there who say, all you need is passion. All you need is a dream. You know, if you dream it, you can do it. And that's ridiculous nonsense. That is completely not true at all. So I think having a business mindset as opposed to a passion mindset or a, you know, and this also has to do the seventh mistake. I'm giving you seven answers to one question.
Mm-hmm.
Is
I like it.
A lot of times we start out with a me focus. What am I passionate about? What are my skills? What's my message? What's my speaking topic? What do I want to share with the world? Whereas the really successful speakers flip it. And they say, okay, who am I passionate about? And then what are they passionate about? What do they need to learn? What do they need to do? What do they want to solve in their business, in their life, in their parenting, in their health and wellness, whatever the topic may be? What is it that my audience needs to know, needs to learn, needs to discover, needs to implement? And let me focus my energy on that, because that's where the intersection of the demand and the money and your skill set and your thought leadership platform is going to land.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense, as you want to make sure – I think a lot of speakers do have a me focus. So clearly passion alone is not enough, but do you think that passion is important? Is it relevant? Is it something we should consider? I mean, where does passion fit into all of this?
Well, so it's a three, and when I do workshops and seminars, I draw, you know, imagine we had a flip chart, because I usually draw this on a flip chart. Circle number one, and I think you're right, it does start with passion. So inside circle number one that you're drawing on your imaginary flip chart in your mind right now, what am I passionate about? So what, and so in that circle, you'd make a list of all the things that I am passionate about. Circle number two, and you want to draw a connecting line between circles number one and two, who am I passionate about? What kinds of people, and I call this, when we get later on into the thought leadership platform discussion, I'm going to refer to this as your buyer persona, your ideal target buyer, your ideal target decision maker, ideal target audience member. Who are the people that turn me on? Who are my peeps? Who's my tribe? Who are the folks that I resonate with the most? That's circle number two. Then you draw a third circle, and here's the magic sauce. This might be worth the whole teleseminar series right here, right now, my friend.
Yeah.
Once you figure out who those people are that you want as your tribe, your followers, your fans, your audience, figure out what they are passionate about. If you connect those three circles, if you find some common area where you're passionate to teach something, they're passionate to learn something or change something or do something, the intersection of those three circles is where your fortune lies. And I mean fortune as in good luck and in good karma, and I also mean fortune as in money and dollars and revenue. So, again, just to review, the three circles are circle number one, definitely it's important to list out and to understand what you're passionate about, topics, ideas, methodologies, messages. Circle number two, who am I passionate about? Circle number three, what are those folks passionate about that I can then feed them and connect them with from my circle number one?
Well, that is very cool, and what I find very very funny about this whole thing is that, you know, a couple of minutes ago you're talking about goobers saying you just need passion, which I agree with you, that's not enough. And your three circles,
people saying circle number one, it's all about passion, totally right. But when I said about those folks who I lovingly called goobers, they draw circle number one and they stay in circle number one and they live in circle number one and they try and market out of circle number one, and that never works.
Right, right. And so we're adding that is, who are you passionate about and what are they passionate about, which comes right back to what you said about not having a me focus, but rather having an audience focus.
Exactly right.
Well, along these lines, let me dispel one more myth or ask your opinion on this. I think a prevailing mentality among speakers and any small business owner, frankly, is that, you know, I'm awesome. And if I'm awesome, I shouldn't really need to market. People should just find me. So my question to you is, do you encounter that mentality with the people you coach and work with? And if so, what is your response to that?
Well, okay, so I don't encounter that mentality. I do encounter that desperately held wish. People wish that were true. Many of them who live in the real world, like you and I, know that that's not true. Because you are awesome. You are awesome, you, Avish. And you're also a brilliant marketer. I consider myself awesome in what I do. If I didn't market, if I couldn't market my way out of a paper bag, there's a lot of people out there who are awesome and broke.
Yeah.
And that is just the plain old reality. So I would suggest, you know, so, and so let me, again, paint the picture here of what that looks like. If you're awesome and you say, well, I don't need to market because I just invented the better mousetrap and people will definitely beat a path to my door. I think in a small, tiny way that might be true. And here's how that happens. If you're awesome, but nobody knows about it, you're going to fall into what I call the subcontractor trap. You're going to do a lot of day training. You're going to be subcontracting. Maybe you've licensed some other kind of program that, you know, you have the intellectual property of the rights to do. But you're going to be going out and doing some branded program, whether it's Spin Selling or Who Moves My Cheese Leadership or Career Track or National Seminars Group, any of these training franchises. Or you're going to get kind of day training work at corporations, and people go, wow, that person's really awesome, and they only cost a few bananas a day. You know, but you're never going to run your own show. You're never going to run a business. You're going to be a freelancer. You're going to be a freelance trainer, presenter, hired mouth. I call those people hired mouth. And if that's what you want to do, and there's nothing wrong with that, you know, it's not really the entrepreneurial path. It's more like trading dollars for hours. That can work. You know, do I recommend it? No. Is it always fun and wonderful, and can you scale that up? No. Is that the key to riches? No. But that's what people do. That's where you end up if you just bank on, I'm awesome, and I'm sure people will just, by osmosis, find me because I don't want to market, I don't want to sell, I don't want to put myself out there. So then you become a really high-quality, best-kept secret.
Right. And like you said, that's fine if that's what you want to do, but I'm assuming most people on this call listening to these programs are more interested in, as we're going to talk about, establishing themselves as the thought leader, as the one who can command high fees and pick their gigs and really generate, you know, an entrepreneurial-type business. So
that's right.
If you're listening, nothing wrong, but just go into it consciously, knowing if you're not willing to market and sell and build these things we're talking about, that's the route you're setting up for yourself, which is kind of a different focus.
That's right.
Okay, David, let's pause for a moment now. I think just, you know, you're right. That three-circle thing has already got me thinking about my own business. So that's a great bit of content you've given us right there. So now you've earned the right to talk about yourself. So why don't you, for people who are on this call who have no idea who David Newman is, you know, you should be very happy about that. No, kidding. Why don't you share with people just kind of the 30, 60-second David Newman bio, how you got to where you are here now and what you're doing now.
Well, I started out, I'll go all the way back to college. So in college, I started out pre-med, failed out of that, miserable failure, ended up graduating with a degree in drama and English, purely for the money-making potential.
Of course.
Then I went to graduate school, got an MFA degree, so I have a graduate degree, a master's degree in stage directing, did professional theater for 4 years in New York, and then once, you know, that sort of panned out to be not a financially lucrative endeavor, I went to university teaching, and I got a substitute teaching job for a guy who was on sabbatical. And then a friend of mine says, hey, you know, you seem to be pretty good at this teaching thing. You can do this for companies, and it's called corporate training. So in 1991, I got my first corporate training job, proceeded to do a series of three fabulous corporate training jobs, you know, corporate training, management consulting, internal consulting, external consulting. with companies like Towers Perrin and PeopleSoft, and I did some work for Microsoft. And so technology and professional services was my background. Each time, the reason there were three jobs is somebody left the company I was with. 6 months later, my phone would ring, and they'd say, hey, you know, we need someone to come over and, you know, do what you're great at doing. Would you come over? So even though I applied for one job, I ended up with a series of three of them over that 10-year period. And then about 10 years ago, about 2002, I went out on my own, and I just said, okay, I'm going to go out as an independent consultant, trainer, speaker guy. And this is what I was talking about a few minutes ago, that I made every mistake in the book. I went out there as generalist, you know, everything that you could possibly imagine, sales, leadership, marketing, hiring, firing, basket weaving, every topic under the sun, I was your guy. When people asked me, oh, so what's your expertise? What do you speak on? My response would be, no, 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 you don't understand. I'm a professional speaker. What do you need spoken on?
Mm-hmm.
And I would jump online, go to the library, read a book, and then boom, out I would go. Now, I can tell you from personal, firsthand experience, that is not a recipe for success. So about 3 or 4 years into, again, batting around and making all the mistakes, I made the good ones twice. So, you know, just so you know, it's not like I've got like a one-trick pony here. Like the good mistakes, I probably made 2-3 times. Finally, having settled on marketing and business development, that's really when my business took off. When I started to take my own medicine, again, focus, niche, three circle exercise. I was doing all kinds of great corporate work. I had corporate clients like QVC and Microsoft and, you know, big companies, IBM. I did some training for, and I realized, you know, I just don't enjoy those people. So when I went through my own three-circle exercise, there I am in circle number two, and I was like, hey, I'm getting paid my full fee. I'm getting paid some nice money. I'm going to all these cool places. I would walk into the room, and my energy would just go, ew, because it's like those people didn't turn me on. That wasn't my tribe. That wasn't my peeps. Those weren't the people that I was put on this earth to serve. So that was, again, big clue number two for me was I want to serve entrepreneurial, solo, thought-leading professionals and professional services firms, basically smart guys and smart gals for hire, people who were comfortable and who wanted to market with their brain power. And that doesn't matter if you're a company of one, if you're a single shingle speaker, consultant, coach, trainer, author, expert, or if you run a management consulting firm, 10, 15 people, you know, but that's my sweet spot. I shouldn't be walking into an IBM. I shouldn't be walking into a Google or a Procter & Gamble. Nothing wrong with that, and a lot of my clients do that work because that's how they're built. And they look at me and they say, man, I could never work with the people you work with. I said, well, good. Let me work with them, and you work with the folks where you're a rock star.
Right, right. And I think the one other thing, if you could share with people before we kind of move back into some of the content, is you have a unique perspective because you did spend a year as a meeting planner, as a person who hired speakers, which gave you a very unique perspective on the industry.
Yes, I did. Absolutely right. So thank you for reminding me. About halfway, at that halfway mark, when I realized, gosh, you know, this really isn't working out the way I was hoping it would, I took a break, and I took a little bit of a side detour, which ended up being the number one best thing I could have done for my career, for my personal development, my professional development. I went to work for a year as a conference producer meeting planner. So that gave me an opportunity to do a couple of things. Number one, it gave me an opportunity to sit in the buyer's chair and make decisions. I reported right to the CEO, so I was like one level from the top. And I had to be accountable, and I had to take my own personal risk, and we'll talk about risk management in your thought leadership platform later in our time today. But, you know, I was placing bets, and I was betting on other speakers, other experts, other thought leaders, and I couldn't afford to make a bad bet. So within 2 weeks of each, and you know this story because we've talked about this a lot just, you know, in our friendship, 2 weeks into that job, I realized, oh, my gosh, looking back on the old me, I wouldn't have hired myself. I was a train wreck. So that helped me personally, and, of course, it has totally changed the perspective on the kind of work that I'm able to do and the kind of value and ideas I can deliver to my clients, having had that experience of sitting in the buyer's chair and knowing what it feels like and knowing how all of that works.
Yeah, it's a really great perspective, which now is helping you immensely with your clients. So let's get into, you know, I'm sure people now are really excited about, okay, this guy knows how to help me get booked because you know what buyers are looking for. So let's start right in with that. And starting off, you know, we've used this phrase now a few times, which is kind of your branded phrase, a thought leadership platform. For people who have been listening for 15 minutes now, we're like, okay, what are you guys talking about? Could you share with everyone what you mean by building a thought leadership platform?
Absolutely. Well, a thought leadership platform is a combination of four things. Number one, it is the content expertise that you share. Number two, it is the engagement strategies that you use to reach out to those people who are in circle number two, your tribe, your followers, your fans, your audience. Engagement strategies, by that I mean execution of social media, article marketing, blogging, writing, speaking, networking, referral building, those, all those are engagement strategies. Number three, a key part of your thought leadership platform is staying relevant. So your thought leadership platform today, the things that you say and what you talk about and the expertise that you share might be very, very different, or should be very, very different from what you were sharing 2 or 3 years ago, and should be very, very different from what you will share 3 years from now. Doesn't mean you're going to change topics or, you know, run away to the circus, but in order to stay relevant and current, your thought leadership platform and the things that you say and the things that you share and the things that you talk about naturally evolve. So maintaining that relevance is part of the thought leadership platform. The fourth component is value. Are people better off after having experienced your speech, your seminar, your program, your boot camp, your workshop, your coaching? What's the value, both qualitative value and quantitative value? How are you improving their lives? How are you improving their business? How are you improving their productivity, effectiveness, collaboration, teamwork, wellness, whatever the topic? That value piece has to be baked in to your thought leadership platform. So just to review, it's not just content. It's not just, oh, I have a blog, I have a book, I have, you know, I've got some PowerPoints. That's my thought leadership platform. That's part one, right? The content that you produce, that you create, is an external it's an externalization of your thought leadership platform. That's how people first experience it. But then once they engage with it, well, how are you spreading it, right? That's the engagement piece. Relevance is it current? Is it applicable? Can I go out and do this tomorrow? Does it speak to me and my problems? And when we talk about this in more depth in some of the coaching and consulting that I do, we talk about speaking prospect language about prospect problems. That's going to increase your relevance. And then the last thing is value. What's the outcome? What's the result? What's the destination? Because if I want to go on that journey with you, you're going to take me someplace from a value perspective that is worth economic dollars for me to get there. Get there in my business, get there in my relationships, get there in my life.
Got it. Okay, I'd like to dig a little deeper into all four of these because I think this is pretty much the foundation of what you talk about and work with people on, right?
It is.
So establishing the fact that, you know, in week one we talked about positioning, we talked again about niching last week with Bob Bly, and your thing with the three circles, all of this assumes that you've got that key niche focus of what you're passionate about, who you're passionate about, and what those people are passionate about. So step number one is your content creation. Now, we did cover this in great detail with Bob Bly last week.
Yep.
In terms of creating a book, writing articles and blog posts and getting a column and whatnot. So is there anything you want to say about content creation beyond just, you know, you need to create a lot of good, relevant content for your market?
Well, the one thing I can say, which is a shameless plug both for you and for Bob, is that Bob is totally the man on that topic. So anything I could add or enhance would simply cheapen what Bob has already shared. And I'm a huge consumer, by the way, and a huge buyer of Bob's books and his online materials, his ebooks. It's fabulous, fabulous stuff, and I highly recommend that people who are stuck on that content piece pick up a couple of Bob's books. He's written something like 60 or 70 of them at this point.
Yeah, 80, I asked him on the last call.
There you go. There you go. And that number keeps going up because he cranks out 3 or 4 a year still. But even his electronic products are great. So content is king, and Bob is the king of content.
Okay. So create content. Just start generating it. So let's move on now. And I like the fact that, you know, that's really what went into – we talked a little bit with Bob about getting it out there, but – you know, with marketing, with your topic, let's dig a lot deeper into the next three. So once you've got all this content, the next thing you need to do is engage, is have engagement strategies to get that content out there, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so why don't you share, let's go a little deeper on this topic. What are some engagement strategies that speakers should be doing? How should they be making the most of their limited time, money, and energy?
Well, I think this depends on what I like to call the three E's. And the three E's are, you want to engage in, no pun intended, you want to engage in engagement strategies. You want to deploy engagement strategies that you personally find easy, effortless, and enjoyable. So I know, Avish, for example, you're a very strong writer, and you enjoy writing, and writing comes naturally, and it's a natural strength of yours. So you've deployed a lot of writing strategies in your engagement game plan. So the blog might be the centerpiece of what you do. You also have an awesome newsletter that goes out. So the newsletter is a piece of it. Posting on social media, that obviously puts out flags and guideposts that guide people back to your writing, to your articles, to your blog, to subscribe to your e-zine. If you're not a great writer like Avish, then let's go a different track. Let's say that you're – now stay with me here. It's a big leap. Let's say that you enjoy speaking. And if it's a speaking strategy, then I'd encourage you, look into audio. Look into doing interviews like this one. Look at a teleseminar strategy. Look at a podcasting strategy. Look at an internet radio show strategy. Very, very successful NSA member and friend and colleague of ours here in Philadelphia, Aldana Ambler, has been doing an internet radio show for the last 8 or 9 years. She just hit upon it as something that hits all three of her circles. She enjoys doing it. She loves doing it. She knows for a fact that her target market wants to consume her information that way, and she finds it easy, effortless, and enjoyable. So she's rocking that whole internet radio format. Let's say that,
well,
again.
If I may interrupt for a second, I think that's a critical component you mentioned, which is that's how her target market consumes information. So
big time, big time.
So it's not enough then for it be. I mean, if it's easy, effortless, and enjoyable for you, but your target market doesn't consume. Like if your target market is high end CEO executive type people. They might not be the ones who are surfing the internet and, or reading blogs all day. So maybe you need a slightly different – maybe even if writing is your thing, you want to write, but writing for the blog may not be the best bet, but writing and trying to get articles submitted into those magazines that they do read is what you want.
Exactly, exactly. Well, and you can almost follow the three circles exercise there. So what engagement strategies do you enjoy? What engagement strategies will they pay attention to? And then connect it that way.
Yeah.
So that, I think, is a huge, huge piece, is you don't want to be broadcasting or engaging it in a vacuum, in a black hole. Now, a lot of times people say, well, how do I know? Do I just guess that high-end CEOs aren't surfing the internet and will never find my podcast on iTunes? I think you have to stop guessing and stop hoping and start doing some research. And the research that you can do with your people in your buyer persona, people who are in that demographic and psychographic that have the traits and characteristics and job titles of the kinds of folks that you want to reach, you can do surveys, you can do data gathering, you can take people out for breakfast, lunch, coffee, drinks, pick their brain, not to sell to them, but really to figure out, you know, how do you use, you know, how do you get information? How, you know, how do you engage in the internet? Do you read blogs? Do you watch videos? Do you ever download a white paper from a website if it's relevant and high value, which we haven't gotten to those two things yet, but we're going there. You know, and so ask them anecdotally, how do you like to receive the kind of information that I'm likely to produce for people like you?
So how would you suggest people find those people that they can conduct these surveys and conversations with?
Well, I don't want to get all woo-woo and spiritual on you, but I will for a second. I came across this quote about a year ago, and it has totally struck a chord with me, and I think it makes a ton of sense for a lot of people. The quote was, "Your address book is your ministry," and not capital M like in a religious sense, but the people who are on speed dial, the people who are in your address book, in your Outlook, in your phone directory, on your smartphone, those are the people who you should be, let me flip it around. If you don't have prospects and people like your prospects in your database, in your speed dial, in your Outlook address book, in your email address book, there's a serious disconnect. Because remember, if you follow the three circles, the people that you're passionate about, people who you want to have as friends before they become clients, those are the people who you're already in touch with. So my guess is that if you look at your current situation, current job, past job, friends, connections, referrals, introductions, there are probably people who are either zero or one step away from you who are in a very similar kind of job, very similar kind of position that, to other kinds of people who would hire you. Now, one thing I want to make clear in this whole concept of your address book is your ministry, I don't want you to sell to those people. If you're doing research, do research. If you're asking questions, ask them questions. And I literally mean breakfast, lunch, dinner, coffee, phone call, email. You should have some people who are in your buyer persona that if you had an urgent request and you wanted their help with something, you could shoot them a two-line email that starts out, "Hey, dummy, need your help on something." If you don't, then you need a couple more friends that are in that target market, or maybe you're fooling yourself. This is where I was. Maybe you're fooling yourself saying, no, I love corporate people. I love corporate VPs of HR and training directors. Well, you know, I don't. I just don't, my friends. I'm sorry. self-realization is a very powerful marketing tool. If I did love them and know them, they'd be in my address book. They'd be on my speed dial. They'd be in my smartphone, wouldn't they? So those are not the people that I am built to serve. The people that I am built to serve, and I it's funny, I actually did this. I'm going to blog about this later. My email went crazy last week, and I had all these old messages, old deleted messages, flooded back into my inbox by the thousands. Well, when I looked at some of those messages, I realized, there's a friend of mine who may be a good prospect. And here's another person that I totally forgot about, so-and-so. Oh, and here's Sally, and here's Bob, and here's Fred, and here's Henry. You know, I owe them a phone call. They were in my address book, even though these thousands of phantom messages were clogging my inbox. But think in terms of that when you're looking either at marketing or even the market research that we're talking about.
Wow, that's great. I like how you said take that back to the first step, which is look at the people you're already gravitating towards to help you figure out who you're passionate about. And it's not...
Those are your peeps. Those are your peeps. Totally.
They may not be the ones who immediately come to mind as having a lot of money, but that's kind of the next step, right? I mean, the first step is just figuring out who these people are. And if you can figure out what those people are passionate about, they'll find money, right? Or that's where the money is.
Well, they totally will, and it's funny because, you know, our NSA colleague Jeffrey Gittimer has a great comeback for salespeople when they're faced with, "We don't have any money." Gittimer says, what that really means is, we don't have any money for you.
Yeah.
Because, again, the relevance isn't there, which we'll talk about in a minute, and the value isn't there. If you nail the relevance and the value, the, then Avish, they will absolutely find the money for you. They'll make the money for you. They'll make the budget.
Okay, well, let's then get into staying relevant, which is the third element to the thought leadership platform. We had creating content, doing engagement strategies. Really comes down to the intersection of what's easy, effortless, and enjoyable for you, intersected with how does your target market consume information. You find that intersection, and you'll have an easy channel to get your content out there. So what about staying relevant and value?
Well, I think relevant, you have to have a strategy that is in sync with the current reality of those people that you're serving. And I'll give you a very specific example. This is any time that you run into the poverty talk, and the poverty talk is, let's say you're calling on an association, and the association says, oh, man, we have no money, we have no budget, our members are hurting, our trade show is like a desert, you know, everyone's abandoned the trade show, we've got none of our sponsors, we have no sources of money, we're hurting, our members are hurting, it's a terrible time in the industry. If you are highly relevant and if you are highly valuable, your strategy on a phone call like that, the reply is, I know. That's why we're talking. Because you say, I know that in our industry, and not your industry, in our industry, right? Because you're a trusted advisor, you're a partner to them now. In our industry, I know that it's bad because of factor A, B, C, and D. I understand that your members are up against D, E, F, and G. My program specifically addresses those things that your people can use to pull the nose up on the plane and to start to turn things around. So as soon as, again, this is about being relevant. So if your industry is hating it, you need to have a program that addresses an industry that's hating it. If your industry is flat, your target market, and this isn't just about, a lot of folks hear me say this and they start to tune out. Because they say, well, I'm not in marketing, I'm not in sales, I'm not like David, you know, that's not my topic.
Right.
This applies to any topic. This applies to leadership, goal setting, team building, health and wellness, mission, vision, strategy, any possible topic, you know, aside from something like, you know, basket weaving or juggling chainsaws. If you're a basket weaving guru or you like to juggle chainsaws like the passing zone, you're not being hired to solve those kinds of problems. You're being hired for different reasons. But I'm talking about folks that have some sort of content expertise specific to a target market. If you're relevant, you're going to stay on their wavelength in good times and in bad times. In fact, what I sometimes say when I'm on the phone with a meeting planner is, in addition to saying, I know, that's why we're talking, I also sometimes say, people don't call me when everything is peaches and cream. People don't call me when money's flowing freely. People don't call me when everyone's getting along great. People call me when it hits the fan. People call me when they're in the dip. People call me when, you know, it's crunch time. My program is designed for industries who are going through a crisis or a crunch or who need to get more out of their existing people or assets. And again, you have to build the reasoning behind that so that you're proving to them that you're relevant and current and you can help.
So how do you stay relevant? Is that just as simple as, you know, reading trends in the industry, publications, websites, that sort of thing?
Well, I don't think it's too much to ask to become and then remain an expert in the business conditions of your target market. And so that doesn't even mean necessarily staying on top of the day-to-day news, but certainly staying on top of the month-to-month or quarter-to-quarter trends, looking at the headlines, subscribing to some of the industry newsletters and blogs. Here's another great strategy, by the way, for relevance, and then we'll talk about value here as well. But relevance, especially for us as speakers, you're looking at industry conferences, trade shows, association conventions, industry meetings. Do some Google searching and look for last year's program, last year's conference website, last year's convention book. Download that, because that is a crystal ball into the past, which is also a crystal ball into the future. What you're looking at when you look at the programming website or the programming convention book, these are things they've already hired. These are programs and speakers, and general session speakers, keynote speakers, breakout speakers, that they've already given the stamp of relevance and importance to their industry. So look at the topics, look at the titles, look at the articulation, look at the focus of things that they've already hired, because then imagine in that industry, not just for that conference or that particular convention, but for anything else related to that industry, you now have your finger on the pulse of what's important to them, what they're booking, what they're hiring, how they're talking about it. Some of the titles will jump out at you as, wow, you know, my title could easily be refocused to really speak to this particular problem or issue or challenge. If you do this, you are 8 steps ahead. You're 8 steps ahead of the guy that says, oh, I have a great speech. It's called blah, 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 and it's going to give your audience members 1, 2, and 3. They say, well, we're not interested in 2, and 3 is not really relevant for us, and we just had a guy do 1 last year. So you totally missed the boat because you were guessing and you were throwing a dart. If you start to gather some basic intelligence of what they've already hired, already value, and are already talking about, you're going to be positioned and focused and be able to articulate and distinguish your offering 100 times better than going in totally cold trying to pitch your program instead of pitch a program that directly hits the bullseye for them.
God, well, that makes a tremendous amount of sense. So let's talk about the fourth element, which is value, and then I want to make sure we have time to get in some real kind of nitty-gritty tactics for getting out and getting your thought leadership platform out there and finding leads and whatnot. So talk a little bit about how do you present and make sure there's value in your program, that fourth step of the thought leadership platform.
Well, I think the value piece really, really connects with the specific, underlined specific, pains, problems, heartaches, and headaches that you make go away. And those pains, problems, heartaches, and headaches can be personal, professional. They could be expressed in all kinds of different ways, and they can be expressed in terms of money, either making more money, more profit, more revenue, saving money, saving costs, cutting expenses. They can be expressed in terms of time, either saving time or generating additional time, personal time, leadership time, staff time, project time, selling time. They can be tied to ego. Ego value is another one, because people want to feel tall, thin, and sexy, even if they're not. And they want to feel smart, and they want to feel like they're ahead of the curve. And so there's a whole layer of ego satisfaction that if you start talking in terms of making people feel better about themselves, personally, professionally, make them feel smarter, make them feel they have an edge, because they will. I mean, you're not faking it. They will have an edge if they benefit from your value. And another one is risk. You know, how to reduce risk. And this is where, when we talk about a thought leadership platform, a lot of clients, let me take a quick sidebar into risk. They say, well, what's the difference between a traditionally published book with a publisher versus me self-publishing my book on Amazon? The difference is the perception of risk to your buyer. If you are an author that's been published by a John Wiley & Sons, McGraw-Hill, Amacom, Portfolio Books, whatever, name the New York publisher that you know you like the best, what you're saying to your buyer then, you as a speaker, is, you know what, I'm a safe choice, because John Wiley put a bet on me, McGraw-Hill put a bet on me, you don't have to be the first person to trust that I'm going to deliver the goods. because John Wiley, they already placed the bet. McGraw-Hill, they already placed the bet. So if I'm good enough for them, I'm probably good enough for you. So that's the risk reversal. That's the fourth category of value. Money, time, ego, risk. If you can work that value equation and any of those levers, you might hit two of them or three of them or all four of them if you're a real rock star at this, that's what's going to get you booked. That's what's going to get you the repeat and referral business, and that's what's going to get you to spread like wildfire.
And so to keep harping on this same point, whether it's money, time, ego, rich, whether it's increasing the positive or decreasing the negative, you don't necessarily want to start with what you feel they need, but rather going back to that third circle, what are they passionate about, right? Are they most passionate? Is their biggest need that they need to make more money, or they need to cut costs, or they need more time? Once you understand what your target market's passion is, that's how you give them the greatest value, correct?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And the bonus on that is the more you can feed that back to them in the same language that they use, the more your message is going to resonate, because then it's going to feel like you're inside their heads.
Yeah. Okay, so content creation, engagement strategy, staying relevant, and value, creating and demonstrating value. That sounds amazing when it comes to building a thought leadership platform. It does sound a bit passive in that you put it out there and wait for the phone to ring. So I want to make sure we get some kind of down to brass tacks here. And I'd love it if you would be willing to share your top few marketing strategies for speakers. Maybe also, because some people, their speaking business is doing okay, so they have time to let the thought leadership platform develop. Or they have a job, so they have time. Some people on this call, started this business similar to me and you, where, we started dumb with no clients, no prospects, no money, and needing business.
I hope no one started as dumb as you and me.
No, probably not. So maybe your top two or three for each active marketing strategies, like if you really need to get business soon, what are some active things you can do? And your kind of top two or three passive ones, like what are the best ways to really start building your thought leadership platform in a way that's going to make the phone ring, that marketing gravity idea within a few months?
Okay, so fastest, quickest, simplest, and hardest are all together, okay? The fastest, simplest, quickest, and hardest, because you have to be ready and positioned for this. Way to get business tomorrow is with a personal referral, personal introduction. So, number one, if you're a terrible human being, it's not going to work for you. Number two, if you suck at what you do, it's not going to work for you. Number three, if no one likes you, not going to work for you. However, I'm guessing that most folks that we're talking with right now are not in that boat. And they are fabulous. They do have good relationships. Sometimes they have great relationships. They are not afraid to call in a favor or three. What you need to say, because now you're totally crystal clear on who you want to serve, how you can add value, how you're relevant. And this is a little bit of a soundbite from our friend Michael Goldberg, who's coming up in our series, but I'm going to steal this from Michael when giving him full credit, Michael Goldberg, CSP. He says, sit down with some of those people who are in a position to refer and introduce you and say, I'd love to ask for your help. I'm looking to meet people like X. I'm looking to meet, and then you put your buyer persona in there. I'm looking to meet CFOs, chief financial officers of medium-sized companies. I'm looking to meet conference producers in the pharmaceutical world. I'm looking to meet blank, right? Fill that in. I would love to ask for your advice, insights, and recommendations. And Michael's acronym for that is AIR, advice, insights, recommendations. He calls this the asking for air talk. And if you can sit down with a couple of allies, advocates, buddies, colleagues, former colleagues, people who love you, your raving fans, and have that asking for air conversation, I'm looking to meet X, I would love your advice, insights, recommendations. Notice you're not asking for names. You're not saying, hey, give me some referrals. Hey, give me some introductions to people that you know. Because when you ask for advice, insights, recommendations, what might come back is so much broader than that. Yes, you'll get the names. Yes, you'll get the referrals. Yes, my brother-in-law works for this big pharmaceutical meetings company. You know, you'll get that. But you'll also get, have you thought about this strategy? Have you thought about writing for this magazine? There's a great blog that I subscribe to that your content would be a perfect fit for that. So you're going to uncover a whole series very quickly now of opportunities, introductions, avenues to start to develop business much more quickly because you have that asking for air conversation, a much broader conversation than give me some names, give me some referrals. But you'll also get, the benefit is you'll also get those introductions and referrals by the way.
Right. And
so that's,
like you said,
that's short term.
And that's, like you said, that's kind of a Michael Goldberg thing. I'm sure he's going to go into much greater detail on how to do that. So be sure to tune back in 2 weeks. And or you can buy the program, in which case you'll make sure you don't miss it. It's a little plug there. Now, ideally, that conversation would be with someone who's in or related to your target buyer persona. However, would you agree that, let's just say you, for whatever reason, you don't have contacts you feel comfortable with that, if you're really hard up and need speed, is it worth having the same conversation with pretty much all of your contacts, even if you're not sure if they know anyone in that market?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and again, it's not preferred. Is it possible and might it yield some great results? Sure, because you never know who knows who. And you never know whose brother-in-law or whose sister-in-law or whose dad or whose son is, connected. You know, it's all the old 6 degrees of separation. Now, here's the other strategy. You know, if you really have no friends and if you've just been in your basement for the last 5 years, use LinkedIn. Use LinkedIn to connect with a small handful of people or go back to your existing connections if you're already on LinkedIn and simply browse their networks. That's a very, very powerful online way to look for people in certain industries, in certain geographies, with certain job titles, and have the asking for air conversation in a virtual way.
So anyone listening who's either starting out in the business or things have been really stagnant and they're like, you know what, I need to really, you know, shake the weeds and get something happening pretty soon, that's what you would say, start with that.
Bar none. That is strategy number one, bar none.
Okay, and frankly, I would say even if you don't need that, like even if you don't need business right away, it's probably
do it
a great
anyway.
Strategy to do anyway.
Exactly. Right.
It's funny because when you said fastest, easiest, best, and hardest, I assumed you were going to say cold calling because to me,
oh my gosh, no, please. I mean, I don't
hard,
care
right?
who the other experts are. I don't care who the other experts are that came before, came after. I am telling you from personal experience and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of phone calls that I have made and my team has made on behalf of our clients, it does not work, period. It
well, you
don't
know,
work.
Lois was a proponent of just picking up the phone and calling, so yeah, we'll let the listeners decide, you know, which strategies. It comes back
Lois
to
Lois and I
days,
are
you know.
About to put on the boxing gloves, and I love her,
yeah.
And 90% of everything she says I aspire to. That one thing, I couldn't disagree more.
Okay, makes sense. You know, people are going to have to, if you love cold calling, then maybe give it a shot. But I certainly agree. Start with this first. Okay, let's talk long term now. You know, because really what we want is, we want to be in that great seat where people are coming to us. And I'm assuming that's the benefit of building a thought leadership platform over time, correct?
Absolutely. Well, and the long-term strategy is very, very simple in purpose. The purpose is you want your long-term thought leadership platform to position your expertise so that more clients find you, more clients trust you, and more clients hire you. So let's unpack all three of those. Long term, your strategy should be get found, get visible, get in front of the target market that you want to influence and where you want to maximize the impact of your thought leadership platform, your writing, your blogging, your videos, your social media. So part of that is search engine optimization. You don't need to spend $1 million or hire some goober consultant. You can go out and buy some great books, $20, The one I recommend is called Search Engine Optimization in an Hour a Day. Search Engine Optimization in an Hour a Day. Great book. If you have a webmaster, you know, just kind of summarize it for them. Tell them what to do. It's not hard. So that is sort of a wholesale, generic strategy to get found. More importantly, more targeted, you want to engage in the communities where your buyers are located. So that means in person. That means association memberships, not NSA or CAPS or any of our speaker buddy relationships. Go to where your clients are. Go to the client-focused associations where you might be the only speaker in the room. If you're talking engineers, you know, you want to have 80 engineers in the room and one speaker, one consultant who works with engineers on communication skills or ethics or whatever it is, right? So,
quick plug on that again with Michael Goldberg in 2 weeks. He's going to be talking about relationship building and networking. So, as far
totally.
As that, those tactics and strategies, we're going to get really deep into that in 2 weeks.
So, online, offline, finding the LinkedIn groups where your prospects are, finding the hard copy publications of each. You said something brilliant that shouldn't go unrepeated. You said, okay, high-powered CEO, they might not read blogs, but you know what? They get that hard copy glossy magazine that's in their industry. That lands on their desk every month. They spend 45 minutes every month reading that magazine because it's the flagship magazine for their industry that they must read to stay current. If you have an article in there, if you have a column in there, that's a huge door opener. So that's what I mean by findability, get found, get visible, stay in front of your target market. That means online, offline, in person, in email. The ideal thing you want to have is you want to have your people in your buyer persona say, man, I see you everywhere. You're in the magazine. You're at the trade show. You're at the convention. I just read your article. I'm subscribed to your blog. I see your videos. You are everywhere. And it's possible, here's another caveat, it's possible to be everywhere in a very small circle. It is not possible to be everywhere. So this is where you, again, want to reemphasize, choose your tribe, choose your audience, choose your peeps, be everywhere that they are.
Yeah.
So that strategy number one is the find piece. Trust is about your content. I'm not going to repeat, you know, our whole content piece. Bob Bly talked about content. We touched on content. People trust your expertise when you share it with them to solve their problems. No sales pitch. One sheet and website and offer and buy this and coupons and postcards. That's not what I mean. That is not trust-building content. Trust-building content is answers, solutions, strategies, tips, checklists, things to think about, things to do, gifts. Think in terms of gifts. Your content is a gift that when given in the spirit of a gift builds trust. And then the last thing is you want to make yourself hireable. So get found, get trusted, get hired. How do you get hired? Well, is that a sales campaign? It's not a sales campaign. And a lot of folks, and I know that you're not a big fan of the word and the concept of sales, Avish, and I am certainly not a big fan of the word or the concept of sales, and it's a developing skill for both of us because we're both a lot more comfortable offering and inviting. So when you build your thought leadership platform, you build your investable opportunities of your products and programs and seminars and speeches and keynotes and trainings, all you're doing is in your campaign to get hired, you are offering value and you're inviting engagement. Offer and invite. Take the word sell out of your vocabulary. Get in the habit of offering and inviting, offering and inviting, offering and inviting. That's how you're going to get hired.
Wow, that's great for both short and long term. And we've thrown this term around short and long term now a few times. For people who like things more specific, do you have any realistic expectations? If you go to your contacts and have that, you know, asking for air conversation, what time frame you might realistically expect to see some results? And also, for your thought leadership platform long-term strategy, becoming findable, building trust, and being hireable, what kind of time frame would be a realistic expectation people should mentally prepare themselves for?
That's a fabulous question. I would say that our short-term strategies could fairly be characterized as 30 to 90 days. And our long-term strategies are going to be 90 days out plus. Now, just a quick sidebar, in the meetings industry, the conventions industry, the association world, booking times have gotten incredibly short. I have clients where they say, well, I just got a gig 6 weeks from today. I got the gig today. The gig is in 6 weeks, and it's in France. Seriously.
Yeah.
And I said, well, was this like a last-minute substitution, or did someone get sick or drop out or have a conflict? They said, no, they just never got around to hiring the speaker till now. We're going to send you to France in 6 weeks.
I was having a conversation with Scott McCain, who, for people who don't know, is a Hall of Fame speaker, Big C speaker, great guy. And he was saying he had a conversation similar to that. He's like, it terrified me because he was talking about how you can become a commodity, especially if you don't have that distinction, that thought leadership platform. Some client called him up 4 weeks out from a major conference with 5,000 attendees to do the keynote. And he's like, I have to ask this, but what if, you know, I wasn't available? What if you couldn't find him? Their answer to them is, oh, we weren't worried. We knew someone would be available. We knew someone good would be available. And he's like, that terrified me because he's like, that showed that speakers are becoming commodities. And that conversation I had with him, and I think what you're talking about here is by building a thought leadership platform, you not only become more findable and command higher fees, but you prevent yourself from just becoming a commodity.
That is so true. And let me share a soundbite that my team and I come across a lot because we run, as you know, we run some of these thought leadership campaigns for some of our speakers. When we come into contact with an association person or a conference person, I can't tell you how many times that we've heard the variations of the following. Speaker selection is not a problem for us. Speakers are a dime a dozen. We're not interested. You know, the speakers that we want, we're going to come to them. Now, when I hear that, that again speaks to cold calling, really? I don't think so. And it speaks even more strongly about your thought leadership platform, becoming an expert, becoming the CEO of your speaking business, and becoming, as Joe Calloway likes to say, a category of one. You don't want to be a, you know, when people say, well, you know, we want to get a speaker, you know, what you want them to hear is, we want Avish Parashar. Or even better, once you skyrocket to success, they're going to say, get me someone like Avish Parashar because he's too expensive, but get me like, you know, the younger version.
Yeah,
you know, get me a guy like him because you want to be a name brand. You want to be requested by name based on your expertise, based on your thought leadership platform. You want to be the go-to guy or the go-to gal. Do the things in this 7-part series, and I guarantee you'll be miles ahead of people who are just another same old lame-o speaker and a total commodity.
Well, that's great, and I appreciate the plug. So let me wrap this up by giving my own promotion, and then, Dave, I'm going to come back and ask you for any final thoughts you want to give to people around the topic of marketing, building their speaking business, or building the thought leadership platform. So a couple quick promotional things, announcements. David has given a tremendous amount of information here if you want to learn more about what he does. Also, he's got lots of free resources, free downloads. Plus, he's periodically offering different programs at different price points, all of which are tremendously valuable. Go to doitmarketing.com. That's D-O-I-T marketing.com. Subscribe to his blog, get his newsletter, get his freebies, and you know, when the price point is right for you, definitely sign up for his stuff because it is incredibly valuable. Next week, week number 4, we're going to shift focus a little bit. First 3 weeks now we've talked about getting yourself out there and getting gigs. Well, once you've got gigs, the best thing you can do is knock it out of the park when you deliver. So next week we're going to focus on how do you craft and write and put together your presentation. We'll be talking with Cherie Alexander, who is a great speaker out of Oklahoma, and she does a lot of work with speakers and athletes and celebrities, politicians, people to help them be better speakers. So she's going to share a lot of insights, secrets, knowledge, wisdom on how to put together your speech. Reminder, if you are listening to the freebie version, you have to dial in at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. However, if you want to get a recording of this conversation with David, as well as recordings of all other six teleseminars, plus the transcriptions, plus a whole slew of fabulous bonuses, you can still sign up for the paid version. Go to speakingexpertteleseminar.com. You'll be able to sign up for the paid version at this price with these bonuses until the end of the program. But this way you'll never miss one, and you can re-listen to them, because, frankly, I re-listen to all of these because there's so much great information. And finally, if you want some individual or more personal in-person help, Fred Gleick and myself are going to be running another speaking school, which is a live event where we get at most 12 people, 4 days, where we just hammer you with every aspect, help you develop all of the things we've talked about, your positioning, your marketing, your product creation, your speech, your presentation skills, your humor, everything. For information about that, go to thespeakingschool.com. So, David, how about some final thoughts to share for people who are listening, you know, how to get their name out there, how to build a platform, how to market themselves, and how to, gosh darn it, start making money as a speaker?
Well, let me offer two things. First thing is some encouragement, and then the second thing is a resource. The encouragement is everything that you need to be successful as a thriving, working speaker is sitting in your chair right now, assuming that you're sitting. But you have all the capabilities, the resources, the tools, the help, certainly in this seven-part series, just a wealth of information. You don't need to get ready to get ready. You need to get into action. And so the first piece of action I would encourage you to take is if you email me, david@doitmarketing.com, I will send you my Advanced Marketing and Sales Accelerator for Thought Leaders Action Pack. And it includes a whole bunch of scripts, what to do and what to say on LinkedIn, social media, some optimization strategies. The Three Circles activity is in there. Simply drop me an email, david@doitmarketing.com. Put in Avish Teleseminar or Teleseminar Gift, and I will email that to you pronto. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Wow, that's fantastic. And you can expect an email from me shortly to get myself a copy of that, because that sounds pretty awesome. So thank you again, David. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week when our expert will be Cherie Alexander on how to craft and write a home run presentation. Thank you, David.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.